When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host Joe Rimmer and joining me today on the pod is Ian Doyle. How are we, Ian?
I'm okay, Joseph. How would you find self?
I'm fine, thank you very much for asking. And also joining us is Beth Lindop. How are we, Beth?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Yeah. Witness and St. Alan's.
Witness, representing Witness.
And that to expose us like that so early on in the podcast.
It's great. So I hope you,
and Runcorn.
I'm Runcorn. I hope you two can get on today. That's the main thing. Unlike Liverpool and Man City.
They can easily get on. That's just a load of nonsense.
Well, Liverpool and Man City. Mm. Yeah, I want to talk about this because you don't, Ian. So yeah. I always like to talk about things you don't want to talk about. It is the big one this weekend. The very big one, as it says in the title.
Somewhat big.
Yeah, we are live on YouTube, so if you've got a question, pop it in the chat and we'll try and get round to it. Ian, our producer, is also following on Facebook, so he'll drop any chats to me. Any questions in the chat to me. It is Friday, I am tired. And we will try and get round to answering them in the course of the podcast. We will start off with the City Aggro. I know there was a game last night. We will talk Sparta Prague, we'll talk Michael Edwards, and we will talk a lot about Man City. But I think we'll start with the City Aggro.
Because what,
I think,
what is the City Aggro, Joe? Please,
I just think it's quite
interesting. Educate me on this.
I thought Jurgen Klopp gave a really good answer. It was the first question in the press conference from Vinny from Sky Sports today. Following up on some comments Trent made to 4-4-2, which were quite quickly blown out of context. I think
he would do that.
I mean, to be fair, we didn't. So I'm quite happy with that. But yeah, they were quite quickly brought out of context. Trent was basically said that titles with Liverpool mean more to the fans of Liverpool. Who'd have thought? And Man City didn't really react very well to it.
It didn't.
Erling Haaland sort of had a little dig about the treble, and then Ruben Dias followed that up with a little dig of his own about the treble as well. You were at the press conference. And I thought Klopp kind of summed it up really, really well.
Well, what was interesting is that Jurgen Klopp, before he even answered the question, said, I've already been told what to say and what I can't say for this. And he says, wait until I get asked the question first. So obviously he'd been headed off in the sense that he knew that he was going to be, or somebody knew that he was going to be asked this question. And then he just basically just gave his own answer anyway, which was, so what? Essentially, he said, you can't tell me that Liverpool don't respect Man City. And what Trent said is entitled to his own view, and I've got no problem with what he said. And that was it, basically. Admittedly, he said it a lot longer than that, and a lot more verbose and with greater insight than I can manage, because I'm not the manager of Liverpool. However, what I am is somebody who's watched these games and listened to them all talk about it, and listened to what Manchester City's players have said in the wake of Trent's comments, which, by the way, must have been made about 4 to 6 weeks ago if they're appearing in 4-4-2 in the current edition, which was only out this week, or towards the end of last week, I think. So he's probably said them while he wasn't injured for a start, so he's not playing on Sunday, which is probably worth bearing in mind as well. But the way the City have reacted does, you know, it gives the impression that they're all singing off the same hymn sheet. So whether or not they've all been told, oh, we don't like the sounds of that, make sure you get this point across. And I think City, I'm going to be honest, I think City's players come out with really poorly. I almost don't even think that they're the ones that actually want to say it. I think, I'm not saying they've been coerced into saying it, but they've just been told, if you are going to get asked about this, make sure you say this, is what my view of it would be. My very long
Ian Doyle conspiracy theory.
It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just obviously what people do in the media industry. I haven't been in it for more than a quarter of a century. I know the way these things work. And it's just added a little bit of a spice to the game, I suppose, that doesn't really need it. But the other thing is that Klopp was very keen to put across that Liverpool have nothing but respect for Man City. And wild, it's fair to say that the fans don't particularly get on some of the incidents that's happened and some of the chants that have been happening over the past 3, 4, 5 years. 6 years, in fact, that when it comes to the actual on the pitch, there's not really much aggro. I mean, there was a bit of a kickoff last season at the Etihad, but that was towards the referee from Liverpool players, Simon Hooper, when he didn't give a decision and City went off and... Oh, Ruben Dias. Well, no, it was Rodri, wasn't it? He didn't get sent off, yeah. So that wasn't even a City player. So, and you look at Guardiola and Klopp on the sidelines and, you know, they really, really get on. They battled as well, didn't they, in Germany with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. So they've got great respect. We saw how much respect the Klopp's got for Pep. And, you know, I went to a rare event of me actually attending a function, which was about 4 or 5 years ago, which was the Northwest Awards. And I got invited, actually, me and James Pearce, formerly of this parish.
So what you're saying is you put yourself forward for an award?
I did not put myself forward for an award. What I'm saying is that we got...
Can we clip that? Ian Doyle put himself forward for an award.
I did not put myself forward for an award because almost all journalism awards are nonsense, and I'm glad you brought that up. But I was invited, along with James, because of the Echo's fine coverage of Liverpool winning the Champions League. Basically, Klopp and Pep were both very pally. You know, one followed the other and said, I want that trophy, I want this one, pointed at the Premier League and the Champions League. And, you know, it took Man City a bit longer, but they ended up getting the Champions League, and that's been sorted. So, I just think, grow up is what I think. What I would also say, by the way, we said this just before the podcast started, is that, got news for you, I think Leicester's winning the league in 2016 probably means more for them, you know, relatively speaking, than Liverpool fans winning the league in 2020. Depending on how old you are, if you're a Liverpool fan who's only like under the age of 35, you can't remember them winning the league, and they've had that long waiting. I suppose that would seem massively important winning it in 2020. But Leicester fans had no idea they were going to win it in 2016. You know, it's still probably the greatest Premier League story there's ever been. So, you know, I would say that, and I don't see any Liverpool players or Man United or Man City or Chelsea or Blackburn or who else has won it? Arsenal. I don't see any of their fans moaning at Leicester if a Leicester fan came out and said that. So,
but don't you think and before we continue, sorry, I've been a bit rude today. I'm a bit tired, so thank you. thank you for listening. So to our listeners, thank you for listening. If you're listening on podcasts, thank you very much. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much, whether you're from America or Australia. We ran through a few of these last time. Ireland, any other part of the world, thank you for listening. We
witness.
Really appreciate witness as any Ireland. We appreciate your support. give us a like, please. Give us one of those thumbs up. Subscribe, press the bell, which is a totally normal YouTube thing, but Ian Doyle gives me a strange look every time I say that.
So I give you a strange look when you say most things, to be fair.
Yeah, but thank you so much for listening. But yeah, I think with City, there's one word in Trent's interview that I think is the reason why they're all getting very defensive, Beth, and that's because he said financially, you know, and he brought up money. And I think with City, there will always be a bit of the chip on their shoulder because everything they do is framed within, yeah, but you've got loads of money. And I said to you earlier, before we came on the pod, I don't understand why City players, when they sign for City, if you're Erling Haaland and you're signing for Man City, you absolutely know that is part of, you know, that's part of City, isn't it? You know when you go to City that will always be the narrative because they do have loads of more money than almost any other club in the world. They have more advantages in that area of the club. So I don't really get why they take that so badly. You know, just enjoy winning all the things you're going to win because you're guaranteed trophies. Where as Liverpool, I think it's a process. You're not guaranteed as much. Other fans of other clubs might think otherwise. But I think with Liverpool, it's felt like more of an effort to get to where they've got to under Klopp. Whereas Man City and Pep always felt quite inevitable with the money they had. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. I think that sums it up perfectly, really. I think that narrative is always going to be there for Manchester City, and you know, perhaps it irks their players a little bit when you look back at the season that Liverpool were on for a quadruple and they missed out on the two big ones, the Premier League and the Champions League. The amount of fans, I think it was close to 500,000, turned out to watch that parade the following day. And you look at Manchester City's parade for the treble last year was probably, you know, fewer than that number. out on the streets of Manchester. And
that's about as many as there's in this room now.
But I think, you know, it's there were a number of City fans, you know, match-going fans, fans who've stuck with them from the dark days to now. And you've got to give them credit for supporting them and staying with them. And they're getting the rewards for that. And I don't necessarily always think it's fair to slam them for the amount of fans that they've got, because ultimately that's where they are, and that's no fault of the players. And but I do think maybe sometimes it does irk them that they know that this narrative is there, even though, as you say, it's maybe something they just need to take on the chin and acknowledge. I think to come to the defence a little bit of Erling Haaland, certainly, I don't know the context that Ruben Dias was asked the question in, but I think it was put to Haaland with very little context. And the interviewer was looking for, you know, to stoke the rivalry, stoke the flames, which we are guilty of doing sometimes in the media, including you in that, Ian Doyle.
No, I would never do that.
Never.
But, you know, I think he said, he obviously responded maybe in the heat of the moment a little bit, and it's made it into a bigger thing than it needed to be. But as Doyle said earlier on, the respect between the managers, the respect between the players on the pitch is there. And hopefully that won't be sort of the overarching theme going into Sunday's game.
I think what's happened there, though, is that the one thing that City have always wanted is recognition and the love of the people. And unfortunately, you're never going to get that if you are this team with, as I always write, the unique set of advantages that they have over most teams. I just think you're right, actually. Congratulations, you're right. You're right in what you said.
Can we clip this? Can we clip this? Just that bit.
You're right.
Yeah, we don't. Right. Thanks for listening to the Blood Red Podcast. We'll be back on Monday.
You're right when you said that about how he knows quite well that what he was walking into. That's why he joined Man City, because they had a really good chance of winning stuff.
Exactly.
Because this is the thing. There have always been teams that have had more money than others. I mean, going back to the 60s, before my time, incredibly, Everton had the money. They were known as the Mersey Millionaires. I mean, the difference between the haves and the have-nots now is far bigger than it was back then, for obvious reasons. But so, I just think City should just, you know, the best thing, this is going to sound ridiculous, the best thing City could do is just go and wipe the floor with Liverpool on Sunday and shut up. Which is what they should be aiming to do, rather than get embroiled in all of this. And I think it doesn't reflect well on them. And I think it's the one thing, isn't it? Not the players, I'm sure, part of the club generally. And in fact, not even the players in the squad, it's just the hierarchy of the club, is that you can push on their buttons. If anybody watch on the YouTube
you
team, you're just pushing. I'm not pressing the bell, I'm just pushing the button.
You can feel it with Pep, can't you? Every time Pep speaks, you know, it's like he's dying for recognition. But I think, well, if you're that worried about the love, like you say, of the people, then Pep, go and manage, I don't know, go and manage a mid-table team and see if you can get them.
Don't even think he needs to do that.
He doesn't need to, but ultimately, by going to Man City,
it's not his fault.
But it is his fault. He chose that job, didn't he? And if you go to Man City,
you're telling me you wouldn't?
No, I'm not saying that I wouldn't. But I think if you choose that job, you know that, yeah, you're not going to get, people aren't going to rush and say, wow, what an incredible, I mean, they do say that about Pep all the time, but he's not going to get, it's not this fairy tale story. It's like, and I've only ever seen the first two, and I've only ever watched them once, but it's like Rocky 2, you know.
You've only seen the first two?
Yeah, and I've only ever watched them once.
I've not seen any.
You've it? What?
Rocky 1 is very good. I don't like sports films because you kind of know.
That's not really a sports film.
But anyway, so my point is that,
by the way,
you know, the Russian fella,
that now that those people over there just turned around and
Ivan Drago, you know, he has all the advantages. He has all the sports science. All
this is Rocky 4, by the way.
Is that Rocky 4? I don't mind.
But Rocky 3 is Mr. T.
This is descending into chaos.
Which one's Rocky 2? He fights Thingy again?
Yeah, he fights Apollo.
Okay. Well, yeah. Rocky 4, sorry. But anyway,
don't watch Rocky 5, it's terrible.
Get back to my analogy. Ivan Drago has all the advantages. Rocky's there training in the snow. No one's watching that film going, come on, Ivan, come on. Let's see if he can pull out this win, you know. And that's Man City. People aren't going to be cheering for them other than their already established fan base.
But again, what I would say about Man City as well is that Pep, what he's done there with the players, they are literally, and I think I'm quite right in saying this, and I don't care if anybody screams me, they are literally the best team that's ever played football ever, anywhere, ever. As a club team, anyway.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
They are the best, right?
Because they
have made the most. You could go in. There's like teams like have had loads of money. Some teams have had loads of money for years and they haven't done it properly. Whereas City, well, I'm sure we'll find out eventually whether or not they've done it legally or not. That's something that's obviously cases pending. But for what they've done, you know, you literally cannot do it any better. And that Liverpool actually have been able to compete, and Arsenal now recently have been able to compete with them over a consistent period of time. Shows you how well them two have done.
I think if you want like an embodiment of the difference between City and Liverpool is you look at Haaland compared to Darwin Nunez. Haaland is just the epitome of a City player, isn't he? He's a superstar. He's quite mechanical. He scores goal after goal after goal. You know, he had a big miss in the weekend, but most of the time he puts them in the back of the net. Darwin Nunez is a bit like the flawed hero, isn't he? Who's had to sort of battle to get to where he is, and he's adored by the fan base because of it. And I think that is reflective, more overarchingly, of the two clubs and where they're at.
Yeah, hello to Stuart Tudor, who's watching from Da Nang, Vietnam, but his hometown is the Pleasure Peninsula. It's the world.
It's not a town.
Pleasure Peninsula.
It's not a town.
That's not the point. It's an area. It's home area. It's not really a turn of phrase, is it? My home area. My hometown.
Yeah. Region.
Yeah. And a few people making reference to 115 charges, which again, you know, City can't get away from that.
Well, we just mentioned that. But they might be proven innocent, and then...
They might be. One thing I would say is, I totally agree, and I think Pep Guardiola is an incredible manager. I think they've got incredible players. I love watching loads of them. Bernardo Silva... might not love him as a person is not the right word, but you know he's sort of
as a footballing spiky, personality.
As a footballer, God, yeah. He's so good to watch. You know, I really like to watch Grealish and De Bruyne.
You haven't even mentioned Phil Foden, yeah, and of course Phil Foden's a player who cost them absolutely nothing.
Yeah, Phil Foden is incredible. The only other team I'd say that competes with them, like you said, for maybe the best footballing team ever is Pep's Barcelona team, which swept it all before it. What was that,
2008, 2009, 2010, 2011.
Yeah, God, that period anyway. But what a football team that was. But yeah, I think they need to get over this need for love, because
yeah, just keep winning stuff. Okay, that's another thing.
There's no romance about them.
I think to a certain degree, Liverpool and Scousers to a point. Mm. I think they're a lot less hung up on. They know themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas I think with Manchester, not Mancunians, but Manchester City as a club, I still think they don't know who they are.
Yeah, they're trying to create an identity, aren't they, almost? But they do have an identity, you know, like Beth said before, they've got a traditional family.
Yeah, but the traditional identity was that they were not Man United.
Yeah, yeah. And they also weren't very good, but stuck through them through thick or thin. So it's really interesting anyway, and I think it's funny, isn't it? Because when Liverpool established that rivalry with Chelsea, which kind of like was my sort of teenage years, and they were like polar opposites. There was like this Liverpool team that didn't have as much money, that was trying to piece together a team but constantly sort of losing players or things like that happening. And then Chelsea, who had everything, two politically opposed clubs. And I think not completely the same, but there's something similar going on with Liverpool and City, and it's created quite the rivalry.
Well, I'm glad we didn't talk about that.
Well, yeah, you're talking
considering you didn't want to talk about it, you did actually have quite a lot to say.
Most of it
was insightful, so...
Well, moving on to Michael Edwards' return late last night. Some news broke. Doyle that FSG, John Henry and Mike Gordon had spoken to Michael Edwards in the USA. It feels like this one's... Liverpool are really going after it, and... I don't know, what sort of gut feeling do you have?
My gut feeling is that they really obviously respect Michael Edwards and the stuff that he's done. My also gut feeling is that this is going to, again, sound a little bit odd. It's almost like they don't trust themselves in terms of where they're going next, because they've got two big decisions to make. Sporting director's a lot less bigger decision than who the next manager is. And I think they know that Edwards knows about the club. He knows the way things work, and he's got very good judgments, as we've seen with players and the people that he knows in terms of who he regards as good in the recruitment areas as well. So I think they want him to come back, not sporting director, because Edwards has got no interest in that. Why would he come back? But as kind of a senior overseer, would he? Well, that's the thing. I think that might be a sticking, but I'm pretty sure if they said to him, hey, you can run the club, he'll go, okay. But I'm not sure whether or not they want to go that far. But there would be a more senior role than sporting director, and he would then take on the part of the responsibility of then appointing a new sporting director and a manager.
Yeah, it would make a lot of sense with the FM to run football operations. We always talk about, and again, like, not to keep talking about rivals, but Man United are the type of club, it's about making good appointments. Well, Michael Edwards feels like the absolute right appointment to run all of Liverpool's football operations, does he not?
Yeah, particularly when there's going to be so much upheaval in the summer with not just Jurgen Klopp going, but a lot of his backroom staff as well. To have someone who knows the club inside out and has such a a high standing within the industry would be massive, would bring sort of a little bit of continuity back to Liverpool and maybe, you know, stop the chaos that would perhaps, you know, stem from bringing in two completely new people who don't know the club at all. I think the only thing, my only concern is I think now Michael Edwards has this sort of, he's viewed as this almost like godlike figure, yeah, who doesn't, yeah, get anything wrong, who never got anything wrong during his time at Liverpool. And it's almost like he is seen as the only solution to managing a club like Liverpool in terms of, you know, behind the scenes. And I think he was, you know, he obviously did an excellent job at Liverpool. That the players that he managed to entice to the club are, you know, well documented. But that wasn't just a singular effort. You know, the manager will have played a part in that. The other people behind the scenes at the club as well. So I think if he doesn't come back to Liverpool, I think now it will be viewed as a bit of a failure from, you know, the outside world, because they've made such a concerted effort to go in and get him. And I don't necessarily think that should be the case, because while he's very good at his job, there's a lot of people in football who are very good at the jobs, and I don't think he is this godlike figure that he seems to have sort of taken on the guise of in recent months.
Yeah, I take that. I think it still will be a massive PR win for FSG.
Yeah, no, I do. I would like him back. Yeah. But
Michael Edwards is not God. That is got to be the headline for this podcast.
I think Beth makes a good point, though, in the sense that there's this weird, throughout football now, this absolute hang up on sporting directors, yeah, and these mythical figures that we don't see their day to day. But we sort of pin all the success, all the, yeah, failure on them. And Michael Edwards, what I was finding, the more you read about Michael Edwards and the more you hear about it, is it wasn't just the data. It wasn't just, you know, he didn't just get on his laptop and pull out some stats and buy a player like that.
That was the basis.
Yeah. It was the relationships. It was. You know, speaking with agents, I think Carragher put in his column, didn't he, recently, about how he'd spoken to Michael Edwards, and it was the relationship with agents which underpinned a lot of Liverpool's success in the transfer market, and working with the manager in other areas. And I think that's why I think Edwards would be a big coup for Liverpool, because he clearly knows how to form those relationships. He clearly has great contacts. You know, some of his biggest successes was finding out about the clauses in contracts, which, again, you know, Julian Ward obviously was responsible for the Alexis McAllister one. So those types of things are really, really important. And I think Michael Edwards would bring that. He's obviously very well connected. But like you say, there's more people out there. And I mean, look, there was a lot of people laughing and making jokes about Jörg Schmacker and his Villa, the Ibethan Villa and all that. But he didn't do a bad job, did he, in the short time?
You should never laugh about Ibethan Villa, to be honest.
And I thought,
bring him back,
well,
I say.
Yeah, I don't think it's gone either. I think he's still there now, actually. But listen to this.
But, you know, I just think it would be a huge PR win for FSG if they could bring him back, because already Liverpool fans will have someone that they know and trust and believe in, and it gives them a bit of time to create the right manager. Saying that, there's a process going on here, Doyle, and obviously they want Edwards first, and they want a sporting director. There's a lot of talk about Bayern Munich moving quickly for Alonso. Is there a slight worry that in trying to do it the correct way, FSG aren't potentially doing it the fastest?
No.
No?
Do you really think that Alonso doesn't already know that Liverpool want him as manager?
Yeah, but then
I don't think if you're Alonso, you've just, it's now basically the only thing that has to be determined now is his brain, what he wants to do, because he can either stay at Bayern Leverkusen, go to Bayern Munich, or go to Liverpool.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone's going to be doing any kind of persuading, because he can see it. He knows what Liverpool are about. He certainly knows what Bayern are about. Leverkusen, are about. And he knows what Bayern are about as well, because he played there. And he's up against them, and he's going to win the league ahead of them. So he'll know exactly what their weaknesses are, and he'll know how to strengthen them.
I think it's telling as well, a lot of the noise that has come out over the last couple of weeks about him, you know, apparently favouring a move to Bayern has come from Germany. It's come from the Bayern camp. And, yeah, you know, why on earth would a team that is, you know, the perennial champions like Bayern are, try and unsettle the biggest, yeah, title rivals in headed into the run-in? You know, I wonder why. So I don't think any of that is to be taken too seriously. And like Doyle said, he knows 100% he's the most coveted young manager in football at the moment. You know, maybe even Real Madrid might come in for him, looks, you know, less likely than Bayern or Liverpool. But I think he will basically have his pick of clubs in the summer, and he'll probably already have, he'll obviously be focusing now on Leverkusen, but he'll probably have an idea of what job he's favouring for next season.
The only thing that might dissuade him is following on from Klopp. And that's, yeah, good, yeah. And that's exactly the same thing for every manager. But there will always be those who, you know, the Sporting Lisbon guy, he'll obviously go, well, I quite fancy this. And he's one that Liverpool, again, on the list. Going back to talking about Michael Edwards, if Michael Edwards doesn't take this job, it doesn't change Liverpool's...
Oh, absolutely not.
What they need to do is just a little added extra that can help them out.
Yeah.
I think as well, if you going back to like the sporting director thing, you've only got to look at the whole saga now going on with Manchester United and Dan Ashworth. It's almost like, as with many facets of the modern game, you know, money is becoming a huge factor, even in terms of sporting directors. You know, the fee that that Newcastle wanted off United for Ashworth to go there, and they're almost becoming personalities in their own right, which I don't necessarily like. I think sporting directors, you know, I think one of the brilliant things about Michael Edwards while he was at the club was he was sort of, you know, Liverpool fans knew what he was and what he did, but I don't think he was like this big, you know, prominent figure that we saw a lot of or heard a lot from, and I think that's what sporting directors should be all about.
But funny enough, it's the reverse, isn't it? Abroad, like in Germany, the sporting directors do all the talking, really.
Yeah.
They do a lot.
I wish Banker didn't say a single word. Yeah.
And every club has one. They are big appointments. They are, you know, Bayern Munich have just appointed a new one, haven't they, in a Bell. So.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
My worry with Alonso is that I still think human nature comes into this, and if Bayern come along and go, we're going early, we're going to make you a good offer, good money, the type of, you know, good money to transform the club, good wages, a good project, and you know, and they're saying to Alonso, tell us now, because we need to know, okay, we want to know. Okay, there could be an element of him going like, all right, I know that Liverpool are interested, but they're still going to sort out Michael Edwards, they've still got to sort out a sporting director. What if that sporting director and Michael Edwards sit down and go, you know what, actually,
okay, well,
we don't think Alonso's the right man.
The flip side to that, if you're Alonso the human, goes, well, hang on, I'm trying to beat Bayern Munich here and they're coming to me. They're approaching me while I'm still trying to beat them.
Absolutely.
And they're trying to unsettle me. Are they trying to unsettle me? And if I'm in charge of them, are they going to do exactly the same thing in case something goes wrong?
Yeah.
I just think as well with Alonso, and I could be completely, you know, way off the mark here. Obviously, it's his former club. It's a huge club, Bayern Munich. So he may well want to go and manage there. But I just think for him to go immediately from Leverkusen to Bayern after, you know, looks like he's going to win them the first ever league title. Obviously, the fans will be, you know, eternally grateful to him, and he doesn't owe them anything. But I think it would maybe tarnish his legacy ever so slightly going there instantly. Yeah. I think one day he might be Bayern manager, but I think that will play a huge part. I think he might not want to go directly from Leverkusen to Bayern.
I think as well, for Alonso, if he went to Liverpool and did 3 years at Liverpool, it didn't quite work out. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as it wasn't a total disaster,
he'd get another chance at Bayern.
You know, if he won the league with Bayern Leverkusen, I still think the Bayern job comes up, what, every couple of years almost? Whereas the Liverpool job comes up, what's probably on average now of the last 20, 30 years, probably once every 6, 7
years.
Yeah, so like, I just think if Alonso wants the Liverpool job, and I know it's going to be hard following Klopp, but you look at the squad, there's probably, in some respects, no better times to take the Liverpool job. It's a much easier job than it was when Benitez took over, or when Houllier took over, or even when Klopp took over.
Well, this is the easiest time to take over Liverpool since Joe Fagan took over from Bob Paisley.
Exactly. So obviously you've got a hard clap person to follow in Klopp, but also you've got the best set of players there since, like you say, the 80s. So you know, I think for me, we were talking last night and I said, oh, yeah, I'm all in on Alonso now. You know, I just think he's got the personality. He's got, you know, they came back from 2 goals down last night to keep their unbeaten record. No, it's only against
Jamie Carragher's suitcase.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good for you. but for all that, you know, there just seems to be an aura about him and about them. And I'm pretty sure if he leaves Leverkusen in the summer, they will drop down the league because he just
seems not going to go up.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. He just seems to have that aura about him. You're not all in on a manager, you told me last night.
I'm not all in on anyone though. Just keeping her. Hang on, I'm not even picking it. You know what I mean? It's got nothing to do with.
No, I'm just personally. You can have an opinion.
No, I'm just because I'm obviously again old. But I've seen this happen so many times. I remember when they got Benitez.
It's nice that I'm young.
Yeah. You're not, no. You're a lot older than Beth is, I'm afraid. How old are you, by the way, now? 50.
You
just look it. Tough times. Anyway, going back to
the chat.
I remember in 2004 when Benitez and Mourinho, that they were going for those two and it ended up being Benitez. So this isn't the first time that Liverpool have been embroiled in a saga of getting a manager with another team. But, you know, just have to keep an open mind because, having said that, look at last night and De Zerbi at Brighton.
Yeah.
4-0 at Roy. I know they've had injuries and Brighton is Brighton. And that Brighton are in the knockout stages of the Europa League itself is a massive achievement. But that wasn't particularly a great result. And Sporting drew with Atalanta, didn't they? 1-1 So
yeah, cards on the table. I just wouldn't touch De Zerbi. I just think he's in the right. He's in the right place at the right time.
Is it the
hair gel's not great, but he's also in the right place at the right time. And I feel like Brighton. They make Graham Potter look good at Brighton because they've got a good system. And what a success to Brighton. I just think Alonso is just another level of aura. And all right, you know, we talk experience, but if Alonso wins the Bundesliga, he's probably achieved more in 3-4 years as a manager than De Zerbi.
So that's not knocking De Zerbi. It's not one of those three. Who else is there?
Well, there will be managers.
I'm asking you.
I don't know.
Are there any in the Premier League that you'd want to see take over at Liverpool?
Realistic. I don't know. Probably not.
Not Arteta?
No.
I know he wouldn't. No. I wouldn't mind seeing him at Liverpool. He'd never do it, though, for the Everton links as well.
And probably if you made me pick a realistic one.
Do you know that he's older than Klopp?
I don't know.
Is he?
Yes,
58.
You're only as old as you feel. Yep. Aren't you? So, should we talk a little bit about Sparta Prague?
There was a game last night.
Yeah. Klopp always says this. There was a game. Yeah, well, let's talk about Darwin Nunes to begin with, because... funnily enough, I was watching the game last night. I was editing, and I saw one of those. I know I shouldn't get drawn in by those banter accounts on Twitter, but I saw one of those banter accounts tweeting.
I did see you retweet actually.
Who is this, and what have you done with Darwin?
Was it my account?
but you know about that. He's going to be one of those types of players. He's never going to lose. He could score 30 goals this season, and he might end up scoring 30 goals this season, and he still won't shake this tag of like. Darwin Nunes is mad. I mean, the chaos thing probably really doesn't do him any favours, does it? Because, what more can you ask for your striker? I mean, the two brilliant goals. The second goal, I know the first one looks amazing, but the second one I thought was just so well taken by a guy just in full confidence in himself at the moment. But what more does he have to do to get people to take him seriously?
Yeah, that was really passionate. Really moved me there.
You know, I don't really want to hear about Darwin Nunes' chaos anymore. I kind of want to hear about Darwin Nunes' results because that's what he gives at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's probably still suffering a little bit from the fact that he came to the league at the same time as Erling Haaland, because there was a lot of comparisons drawn between the two of them when they both came to England. Obviously, similar ages. You know, on paper, Haaland was the cheaper signing. Of course, I think all of the other add-ons behind the scenes would probably see that not be true. But
more football banter,
with a Z.
And then obviously you have the Community Shield where Haaland misses an absolute sitter and Nunes scores, and you know you get people on social media sort of saying, "Oh well, you know Nunes is going to have a better season," and ultimately, obviously, Haaland goes on and wins the treble. So. I think he's still suffering the consequences of that because he's never going to be Erling Haaland, but I don't think Liverpool fans want him to be. I think he is the perfect striker for this Liverpool team at the moment. And I think, you know, we've spoken a lot. We've probably spoken about him every single week, haven't we, this season, whether for good reasons or bad. But ultimately, the overarching theme has been that Liverpool are a better team with him on the pitch. And I think there's been times where we wanted him to translate all of those good things, whether it be his work ethic, whether it be his ability to be a nuisance to defenders or set up teammates. We've wanted him to sort of yield genuine, consistent results, and that's what he's doing now. I think he's got 8 goals, 3 assists in his last 10 games for the club. I mean, you can't really ask for too much more than that from a centre forward.
I mean, 16 goals and 11 assists in all competitions this season now. I mean, that's just a really good return, isn't it? And I think the likes of Haaland and Salah as well, and to be honest, the success of Liverpool's front three before Nunes came along has elevated our expectations. But, I mean, we're 2/3 of the way through the season? It's really, really good return, isn't it? And he's posting great numbers. He's kind of, I think early in the season, I remember sitting on these pods talking about, will he fulfil his potential? I think he is fulfilling his potential, isn't he?
Don't forget as well that his recent numbers, most of them have come when Salah wasn't playing. True. So they've had to have somebody step up, and he's done that. Not just him, because you look at Diaz has done exactly the same thing. Yeah. Jota had as well before he got injured.
Yeah.
But I just something comes very unlikely. But with Nunes, you mentioned then about chaos. When was the last time we wrote that? We just don't do it anymore.
Well, no, but it's still the overriding narrative.
Then he's coming back to the Man City thing at the start, the narrative of them. You know, can you ever change it? I don't know. I think with Nunes, I just don't think he's bothered, to be honest. And you saw that with the Andy Carroll stuff, with the chants. He probably can't understand them, although I'm pretty sure he does, to be fair. He's pretty sure he does. And every time someone's doing that lately, he just goes on and scores against them. And a lot of his goals are important ones. The first goal, which wasn't great keeping, was it? Let's be honest.
No, but it was still
a great hit. It was a great hit, but the keeper probably got to do a bit better with that one. But that was at a time when Liverpool were under a bit of pressure because Sparta had actually started quite well, even though they were 1-0 down. And I think when it went 2, it just took the game away from them a little bit. And
then his
third one was a very, very good finish from a player who last year would probably have took that 5 seconds earlier and launched it into the orbit.
Yeah, he allowed it to bounce, didn't he, and then just struck it so sweetly. I love a sweet strike. Quick one. Just
can you have a soundly struck volley?
We were talking the other day. What is your favourite type of goal? Like long range, volley, dribble, passing move?
I think one of my favourite Liverpool goals, I'm not quite sure what you would term this.
This is only a very small segment. So.
Sorry. I'll throw you off. On International Women's Day as well.
TikTok,
We're on that as well now.
The West Ham away counter-attacking goal where is it Shaqiri who plays... No,
plays it to Salah.
And it's Salah just like the most exquisite touch to finish it. I'm not quite sure what you would describe that as.
Yeah. It was a bit like...
There was one at Bentley as well, a Shaqiri score, actually.
Yeah, that was the last minute as well, wasn't it, with the flowing move? Yeah, a flowing move with first-time passing up one into the other.
Yeah.
And a really neat little finish.
Although, for me, any goal that goes in. As long as they go in really early so I can get my stuff done before the end. And no of this last-minute goal nonsense. Come on. Get it.
Right.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Alexis McAllister, that's the other one I want to talk about. He's very good, isn't he?
How good was that pass, by the way, for the goal? He was a great pass. And he did so well to win the penalty. And the Liverpool have finally got themselves a penalty taker that isn't Mo Salah. You know, that when Milner left, they were kind of wondering how and who should take him. I think Nunes missed a couple. No, he scored, missed one, didn't he? Yeah, missed one, scored one. And they had the other penalties. I can't even remember. I don't think so.
Sorry?
Did they add the other penalties? I can't remember. That Nunes, Salah, I think. That's, I think it was Salah's missed a couple, but, you know, as long as McAllister just tucked it away, and that kind of sums up the mood he's in at the moment. Since he's been pushed a bit further forward, he's making a massive difference. Yeah. And I've said this before, he's become the player that I saw when anybody watched the games in July and August saw in the summer. You could just tell he was going to be really good for Liverpool, and that's proving the case now.
Yeah, I mean, he's becoming massively influential, isn't he, in Liverpool's midfield?
Yeah, I think he's got something like 6 goal contributions in his last 5 games played.
You've been reading all these stats.
I have. I just love Alexis McAllister. I could sit and read about his stats all day long, but I think it was interesting because that first game when he moved sort of into that number 8 role, there was a lot of talk of actually maybe he was better in the 6, but we're starting to see now him being able to influence games further up the pitch, which is great to see. And he's got a real partnership with Endo and with Nunes as well. As a couple of times now he's set him up this season, and they've got the little celebration that they do together, which is really lovely. And
how do you pronounce the drink?
Is it mate or mate? I don't know. Have we got any South American viewers who could...
I don't think it's mate, you know. I think it might be mate.
It doesn't matter.
Continue.
But yeah, he's probably
laugh at your own jokes. Sorry, Beth.
Right. For me, he's probably up there for signing of the season in terms of when you look at the outlay for him and what he's come in and produced in, you know, a team that many people, Coffee and Doyle, expected to be finding the feet this season.
Fifth. Put the camera on.
It's not finished yet. It's not finished yet.
On the end of the season,
it's not over.
I want you to look into that camera there, and I want you to say, "I am sorry. I'm sorry. I disrespected this Liverpool."
Ian Doyle, who, by the way, still doesn't think Liverpool are in a title race.
Who said that?
In a title race.
Well, you don't think they're in with a shout of winning the league.
When have I ever said that?
I've got the proof.
Oh yeah. Whatever.
Go on.
Couple of documents.
Anyway, this has all got a bit heated. But Alexis,
Is it a controversial document?
Controversial document.
Alexis McAllister is incredible, and hopefully will continue his rich vein of form to the end of the season.
Funny enough, Liverpool, the 3 midfield players they've signed, I mean, start the season...
Four, sorry,
Ryan Gravenberch, I apologise. But the 3 that have played the most, we talked all in the start of the season, it was Szoboszlai, totally in awe of how good he was, and he's been a cracking signing for Liverpool. Endo is the best player in the world, best player ever lived to play for Liverpool. other than Emil Heskey and Alexis McAllister is now up there as well. So just three really, really good signings. I love Endo, by the way. I think just a very quick, him winning the ball high up the pitch for them to win the penalty yesterday and win the early chance as well when Nunes sort of went.
I was a little bit concerned during the parts of the first and second half where he seemed to forget how to play football, but I think we'll let him off.
I think he's great. Just think he really... yeah, I really, really, really like him. Anyway, we'll move on to picking our team, I think we'll
is it? Anything else to chat about? Something else happened.
I did want to ask you, and we've had a couple of questions about Richard Hughes.
Yes.
Who is somebody who is...
excuse you.
Sorry.
Sorry, who's been linked with Liverpool sporting director role? He's
someone that Michael Edwards.
Has done a good job at Bournemouth, responsible for a lot of the good signings they made.
Hmm.
Tell us more, Ian Doyle. You've written about him in a few pieces.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he was brought up in Italy and he was on the books at Atalanta. Pretty much he's a Scotland international. Basically, his parents obviously British and his dad was working over there. He was brought up over there. He ended up at Arsenal's youth team and had his career playing. People might remember him playing for Portsmouth and Bournemouth, actually. But since he retired, what was it, about 10 years ago? He's progressed on the recruitment team at Bournemouth. And yeah, you're right, he's become a big name, again, in these circles that we don't really see. But every now and again, you get a glimpse of it when somebody talks about people such as Michael Edwards, such as Richard Hughes, such as the guy at West Ham, Tim Steaton, I think that's how you pronounce it, who was at Leverkusen before West Ham and obviously did quite a lot in building their squad and getting Alonso to the club, which was a kind of a big deal for somebody like that to go to Leverkusen. So, yeah, Richard Hughes, he is got the track record. He can speak, obviously, quite a few languages. Like, we've seen that with Julian Ward, how helpful that can be, depending on who you want to sign.
Did he play for Portsmouth?
I literally said that. You weren't listening with
it.
Did you zone out?
Those things are big job. You know, you have to read this questions.
Which is why Steve Killen is much better at it.
Hey, cut that out, Ian. Yes. Get that cut out.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, he is somebody who's one of the four, five, six people that have been mentioned. And again,
did he play for Grimsby Town as well? Did you mention that? Sorry, go on.
He is one of those people mentioned, and it obviously comes with the reputation of somebody who, certainly for watchers, Liverpool fans who are watching the Premier League, can actually see some of the fruits of his labour with Bournemouth. He also helped appoint their manager, whose name is
Areola.
That's him, yeah. Andoni's his first name, yeah. Mm. So. There we go.
He was born in Italy, of course. Scotland International.
I've said this.
I'm only joking. Stad worked for Penguin Books.
I'm sure he did the co-commentary on BT Sport when they existed for a start, and when they had Italian football. I'm sure I've heard him on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sort of sounds like a plan, doesn't it? Michael Edwards, Richard Hughes, Xabi Alonso. Sounds like a plan to me. Let's pick our teams for...
We didn't done the injuries.
Let's quickly talk injuries. For a couple more questions, including one on injuries. Yeah, so if Edwards return, does Klopp stay? No.
Nope.
That's Klopp is definitely going. I think we're going to have to sort of get over that one. Klopp has gone there. Yeah. And then how's Jota doing? So that probably takes us on to injuries. Going in, he's injured. International break.
I mean, we haven't heard too much about his progress, but you know, the earliest it's going to be April.
I'd be surprised.
If you can get any part between now and the end of the season, I think they're expecting it. Yeah. I think it'll be a massive boost because Liverpool have said after Saturday they've still got 10 more league games.
Mm-hmm.
Loads of 10.
Plus potentially what? 6 more Europa League games?
Just stick with the league.
There's quite a lot of games. But what I'm trying to say is could be looking at like 20 games before the end of the season. So
yeah,
a lot of football to play. Konate. Klopp wasn't really drawn in, was he, in the press conference, Beth? I don't think that's a good sign for the weekend.
No, he didn't look good. I mean, it just looked like a hamstring injury immediately, didn't it? At the time, was quite reassuring to hear Klopp say after the game that he seemed quite positive about it.
Yeah.
But we know he's someone who's had issues with niggling injuries like that in the past. He's had two hamstring problems already this season, hasn't he, I think? So
I don't think Liverpool are in the position to take chances.
No, I don't think, especially against Manchester City, it's not the sort of game where, you know, he's going to have a really quiet day at the office. He needs to be at his best. And if he's not, which I think the chances of him being at his best are probably pretty slim. Whether Jurgen Klopp wanted to keep his cards close to his chest a little bit this morning, who knows? I mean, if he's fit enough to make the squad, then, you know, that would be encouraging for Liverpool. But I can't see him starting unless it was, you know, a real, real precaution. But he did look like he pulled up, didn't he? Which, to me, indicates that he's got at least a little bit of a problem there.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he plays. What about you?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I don't think there's any chance he's going to play, to be honest.
Mm. So, with that in mind, who would you pick at centre-back?
Well, if we're going to go through the team,
Quinn in goal.
The right-backs, we'll go Angus. You know, it's actually quite difficult. I'll tell you why. Because Tsimikas didn't play a single minute on Thursday. I was expecting him to play. So I'm thinking, does he play against City? Because he played at the Etihad.
He played really well, actually.
So I've taught myself now into starting Tsimikas at left-back. Van Dijk's obviously starting. And then I don't think you can play Kwanzaa. I think he's done really well. But funny enough, I actually thought he had a little bit of a struggle yesterday, just the way that the game went, certainly the first half. Wasn't entirely his fault. There wasn't much protection. Klopp mentioned it. But, you know, it was a bit of a learning experience for him. And if you've got Gomez in there, he can play centre-back, obviously. Although I think he's only started two or three games this season there. But last season, his best game of the season was against Man City, though, playing centre-back, I'm pretty sure. I'd have Conor Bradley, obviously, then has to play right-back. Although, I would imagine, had Konate not been fit, it would have been Konate centre-back and Gomez right-back.
Yeah, agree with all of that.
Yeah, I would agree as well. I think if Konate was completely fit and available, which we think is unlikely, but if he was, he starts at centre-back, and then I'd have Gomez at right-back, purely because I think Liverpool don't have, you know, a vast wealth of attacking options to bring off the bench at the moment. And I think Conor Bradley, as brilliant as he is, and as much as, you know, I've got no problem with him starting against City, I think he's the sort of player, if it's a tight game, you bring him on. It's almost like bringing an attacker on because of what he's able to do higher up the pitch. So I think if there was a chance to bring Bradley off the bench, I think that would be quite good. But yeah, it's looking like he's probably going to have to start at right back and go in my centre half.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's going to come down to a lot of those individual battles, and it is a shame because I think Konate is so good when you're pushed right up the pitch and they break. He wins a lot of those races, doesn't he? But Gomez is no slouch, and yeah, it'll be a real test of Bradley. And like you say, I think I probably would have preferred, and I'm sure Liverpool would have played Gomez at right back had he been available. So go on, Beth, you can take it away with your midfield.
Take it away. I think it picks itself, doesn't it, really? I think Endo, Szoboszlai and McAllister. I think maybe Szoboszlai, Doyle's pulling a face.
No, that's just been normal face.
Maybe Szoboszlai, I don't know, maybe he's not fit to start, but I think he certainly looked a lot sharper than he did against Forest. So, Endo, McAllister, Szoboszlai for me.
I do actually. Endo, McAllister, Szoboszlai. What would you think?
Endo, McAllister,
Yes,
the same three.
Have we picked the same team so far?
We have done that.
Oh, this is
you know, you put Tsimikas in, actually.
Yeah, I did. But you agreed?
I agreed it in. You made a compelling case,
but I just don't see it.
Well, then you should have said that, shouldn't you?
I don't know. I just can't see him dropping Robertson for
Can witness and say Allen's never get on?
No.
I'll agree with you. We'll put Tsimikas in.
Now that Fiddler's Ferry's going, you know.
Who does the dream belong to?
That's St.
Helens.
That's St.
Helens.
Yeah.
But we are in the ice rink, so it's...
We are living the dream, whereas they're a chemical nightmare.
Wow. Victoria Park or the Dream? What's the park called? The Dream? Is it?
I think it's a form of mine, isn't it? A pit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A pit.
Do we have pits?
Victoria Park. Whilst we pick our team, Victoria Park for the Dream. Rather walkie dog.
Victoria Park because it's got like a nice little cafe and stuff.
Well, there's a Victoria Park in St. Helens. Which one are you talking about?
Victoria Park in St. Helens.
I've never been.
This is the real quiz. Right, pick your front three.
All right. Well, it's going to have to be Nunes and Diaz. Nunes down the middle and Diaz on the left. Now, very much everything else that we've just said, I'm going to play Harvey Elliott at right forward, I should say. I'm going to play Harvey Elliott.
Instead
of Gakpo. Salah's not playing. Salah will be on the bench and he'll come on for half an hour. Salah's had like four training sessions. He will not start against Man City.
Yeah, I think I'd love Salah to start, but if he starts, then he's got to come off, hasn't he, before the hour mark. And I think it's unlikely that Liverpool will have the game sewn up in the first hour. We know they're very much sort of a second half team. So I think maybe you bring him on at half time or, after 60 minutes, if the game's tight and you need a goal. I don't know. I mean, if he's completely fit to start, I think Sal will make a case to try and start.
I think that's crazy talk. I think he starts.
I think they've
been managing it and they prepped him for this and he will start. And I think they will bring him off. I think he'll go off at, say, 30.
But they never sub him, though.
I think he starts. Should we have another bet?
No, I'm not having another bet. Yeah. I've got any money left.
You won the last
bet. He wasn't fit.
If
he's fit, he will play. And the bet was always if he's fit. You can't, like...
True, but I was more right.
No, you weren't. You said if he was fit, he wouldn't play.
He wasn't fit and he didn't play.
If he was fit, it doesn't even matter. He wasn't available. He couldn't have been picked. If he was fit, he would have played. I can't even remember what game it was, but he would have
played. It was Wembley. It was the final.
Yeah.
He was. He was never going to play.
He didn't play. So the bet is null and void. Null and void. Get rid of it. Asterisks. I can't remember. He's in my team anyway.
I
think Salah plays. I honestly think that they will have managed this and they will have this in mind.
I agree with that. I do think they've maybe this has been the one that's been on the horizon, and that's maybe why they've not risked him as much over the last couple of weeks.
I also would argue don't often see Klopp. Like, look at last night, for example. He doesn't go, we'll give it a go in the second leg and try and win it there. He likes to try and win it and then make the changes. So I don't think he would imagine, we'll try and keep it tight and then bring Salah on. He's more likely, I think, to play him from the start and bring him off. But it would be Salah, Nunes and Diaz for me.
Congratulations.
Bye.
Interesting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Give us a score prediction. Beth, we'll start with you because he will inevitably say Liverpool are going to lose this game.
Liverpool 2-1 win.
Agreed. Yeah.
I'm going to go Liverpool to win 2-1.
Wow. Clean sweep.
Wow.
Clip that in. Clip that again.
This is the first time I've ever heard.
He's writing it down. He's clipping it.
First time I've ever heard LFC hater Ian Doyle be positive about Liverpool.
Yeah, born
look at that. Someone called him a negative Nancy on the podcast.
A negative Nancy?
He is not a negative Nancy. He's a positive
Pete. I want to say you said
Liverpool 2-1. No, not on the other week.
The other week.
I'll find it for you. But look at that. We've turned him. By the end of the season, he'll be predicting Liverpool to win everything.
And then you'll be saying, you said they'd finish fifth. Are you bringing a downer to everybody?
Yeah, you're going to look into that camera and you're going to apologise. Before we go...
Can we do a back page?
If people want to read your positive tweets or when Liverpool get corners, where can they find you?
And when the game starts and when people get booked. Yeah. At Ian Doyle Sport, or if you want to have a look on Threads, the lesser spotted Threads, or Instagram, where for some reason I now have 32,000 followers after Wembley, that's Ian_Doyle_Sport.
You throw in a few cat pics on Instagram as well, don't
you? One.
There you go.
You're more likely to see a KFC.
KFC and cats.
No, that's not linked.
Okay.
Not Kentucky Fried Cat.
Kentucky Fried Cat. But it could be the stuff they throw in.
Sorry, Beth.
Where can we find you on social media if we'd like to follow you?
At Beth_Lindoff on Twitter. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Don't die. At JoeRimmer88.
Is that your age?
That is my age. 88. Yeah. 89 this year. Thank you so much for listening. Give us a like. Subscribe. Hit the like button. There's only 11 of you. There's 142 of you watching right now. I want all 144. I want all 144 of you on YouTube to like that button. Come on. Hit those thumbs up for us.
Thumbs up.
Give us a rating on if you really like this awful botched job of a presentation. Give us a rating on Apple.
Hang on. If Theo would have said that, you'd have absolutely lost it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
Embrace the chaos
of the job.
Nunes is no longer chaos. We are.
Yeah, we are chaos. They're all leaving us. That number is dropping. So thank you so much for listening. We better wrap it up. We'll see you again on Monday to hopefully talk about a Liverpool win and to get one step closer to Ian Doyle apologising. And that is the real quiz. Good night, Tara.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.